Greetings, this is the Daughter of God cast, episode 048, Team Dog. Daughter of God is raising money for Wild Waters. That means this podcast is family friendly and mostly coherent until after the open water swim on August 12th, 2017. Bring your kids and grandparents together for a wholesome cognitive rendezvous right now. Blah, blah, blah. Daughter of God cast, 12 years of movie making, post-apocalyptic romantic comedy featurette, Tree Fuji Split, a.k.a. Dan Kelly, the movie that made me, and so on and so forth, etc. If this is your first episode and you have no idea what any of that means, you may have just stumbled onto your bliss, what you've been longing for your whole life. Congratulations, and stick around. Last week in episode 047, we talked with Christine Chrisman about what a watershed is and how her organization, the Watershed Center, stewards the wild waters of Grand Traverse Bay. In this episode, 048 Team Dog, Christine and I talk about the Watershed Center's August fundraiser, a 2-mile open water swim in the Grand Traverse Bay. Daughter of God has entered a team. Team Dog. Me. Team Dog is throwing down the gauntlet. Me, are fired up to both be one of the top fundraisers and the top finishers for the swim. What's an open water swim got to do with a science fiction movie? A post-apocalyptic romantic comedy? Daughter of God is a fairy tale about what happens when wilderness, the basis for the global life support system, gets taken for granted. That's the post-apocalyptic part. But even after a slew of apocalypses, love triumphs. And that's the romantic comedy part. This is certainly an unpredictable podcast. One week we're talking about 12 years of movie making, and the next we're raising money for wild water stewardship. I'm just following the recipes in this book, The Surefire, registered trademark, method for successfully releasing your surreal indie featurette by Emon Ra. This is the unabridged English translation of Egyptian hieroglyphs found in Australia, of all places. Who knew the Egyptians had cinema or even visited Australia? But I guess they did, because here's this book, and everything we've ever been taught about history is wrong. Just like the supposed limitations of your physiology are total bunk. Actually, this is the Starfleet Technical Manual, circa 1975. I'm just making up this podcast as I go along. Me and the cosmos. Aren't we lucky that there isn't an owner's manual for the human experience? Who wants a bunch of rules and maintenance schedules? It's so much more fun to just wing it. So back to Christine Chrisman, Executive Director of the Watershed Center, and I. Here she is listening politely to my unsolicited advice about diversifying the Watershed Center's board of directors. She then explains why the Watershed Center decided to do an open water swim slash fundraiser and why the Watershed Center needs to raise funds at all.
So there's always possibilities and stuff that are out there. Anybody I see, any conversations I have with anybody, I'm always thinking about that. We do have gaps in both skills set, you know, in our knowledge base and sort of in our age and demographics and all of that. I'd love to have people from different areas of our watershed. We have a lot of heavy focus on Traverse City. I'd love to have some people that sort of represent some of the other areas that we cover.
Because it is, you say, 1,000.
Yeah, it's 1,000 square miles. So yeah. Goes, you know, Northport all the way down in the Kingsley area,
wow.
Kalkaska, the whole chain of lakes. So all the way up, you know, in Antrim County. So it covers a really large area, a lot of different smaller urban centers. You know, there's a lot of farms in that area, a lot of agriculture. So having board members that really represent those different demographics that our watershed actually serves, I think is important. So always looking for some to fill some of those gaps.
That's cool. People who have spare time, which are retired people, and that means that they're typically older. And
correct.
How do we get like teens and 20-somethings? Those are the people we need to reach most, because they're the people who are actually forming their opinions and understanding what the future looks like.
Yeah.
And the more young people we have that actually are involved. So how do we get them involved? I mean, obviously, they need to either go to school or work or both.
Right.
So that's just something that occurred to me, the whole stipend thing, just being able to say, here, come to these meetings, you get this much per meeting. For this kind of work, a great way to get some different blood in there.
Yeah.
And it's kind of non-traditional. I don't know if nonprofits do that as a rule.
You know, I don't know. I've never come across it, but I don't know really sort of one way or another.
Why couldn't it be done?
I think, you know, the charge of the board is really your strategic direction and your financial health, right? So, you know, a lot of boards actually require a certain amount of their board members to donate back or to sure. fundraise for them uh-huh. and that sort of thing. So the model really is sort of opposite of what you've been talking about.
But
so flipping that on its head and trying, if you're looking for a certain person that you feel is going to fill a niche that you have on your board, sort of flipping that.
The board diversifies and they hear from different people. The board itself, because you know how boards get, well, I mean, I've been involved in a few nonprofits, they can get kind of, no matter how motivated and passionate, having new ideas is always energizing. Yeah. Even if they're a little contentious.
Oh, absolutely. Yep. And that's why you need people who have different ways of thinking. People who are passionate are great, but if you don't ever talk about things and challenge things and have diverse opinions, you know, then you just get a bunch of people drinking each other's Kool-Aid and you're kind of stuck in a rut.
What's the whole idea behind this open water swim event?
Yeah. It's interesting. We've been thinking over the last 5 years or so, you know, how as a nonprofit do we let people know about what we do? You know, nonprofits like fundraisers, right? Mm-hmm, you get mm-hmm. a lot of events. How do we find something that helps us raise money that also helps people better understand who we are and what we do and connects people to that? And it really was just sort of a matter of circumstances. We're part of the international group, the Waterkeeper Alliance. And so our baykeeper is a waterkeeper. And we sort of stumbled across another group, Buzzards Bay, who does a swim similar to this and has done it for years and is incredibly successful at it. And we're looking around thinking, okay, there's all kinds of running races and festivals and everything, but there really wasn't a swim. And so it was like one thing kind of led to another, and we're like, what a better way to get people in the water. You know, we always try to get people on the water because you get a whole different viewpoint of what the world really looks like, but in the water and swimming in it and appreciating, you know, we had people who did the swim that either liked or didn't like the fact you could see the bottom. You know, our water's so clear, you're in 50 feet and you can see the bottom. That freaked some people out. Or some people thought it was great because they could see the fish swimming by.
Mm-hmm.
So that whole viewpoint of, you know, being able to actually enjoy what we're working so hard, we collectively as a community are working so hard to protect, it just felt like a no-brainer. And the piece about the swimmers themselves helping us fundraise has really been successful for bringing people who had no idea who we were and what we did, and in a whole bunch of different ways, sort of moving that forward. You know, whether they get involved with us as an organization, whether they educate other people about things, you know, whatever it is, we've got a new group of folks who are sort of getting that energy behind what we do again and helping, you know, when I see those things of the folks that are fundraising and you hear their stories and why they're doing it and, you know, this is a challenge, but I'm super excited because I get to do this thing in the water and protect the bay. That stuff has just been really great for us to recognize that there is that community of people that are out there that value this just as much as we do, that want to get out and enjoy it just as much as we do, and will work to protect it in different ways than we can. So connecting with that group has just been phenomenal, and this is only the second year we've been doing it.
What was there an open water swimming group around before you guys launched this?
There are small little pockets of groups.
So I mean, I know, anecdotally, I know a few people who will open water swim with me, but yeah, I didn't know if there was actual... There's always people who will do it, but there wasn't really anything organized, or was there?
I don't believe there was, and I know that there's training programs, you know, like the Y has triathlon training programs and things like that, so I think as pieces of other things, or master swimmers and stuff, but, you know, an organized open water swimming group that sort of this was their focus, I'm not sure that there was. You know, I know that the training aspects and the abilities to get, you know, in the water and and actually swim for 2 miles is important to folks. And we've really tapped into some great resources that were out there. But this has sort of also created another community of people who know now that there's other open water swimmers, and you know, there's things that pop up, and then there's organized stuff. Right now, every Friday morning, we have open water swim with, we're going to do one on the course here in a couple weeks, so mm-hmm. that people can see what that's like. So it's been a great way, I think, to connect those people that might have been doing stuff kind of in little separate pockets and get them sort of feeling that sort of community aspect of people who are doing the same thing they're doing.
And would you say that those open water swimmers have turned out to be kind of like evangelizers for the whole mission of the Watershed Center?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, every time there, we rely on... We ask those folks a lot throughout the year.
Oh, wow.
Not just about the event itself, but about different things that we're thinking of doing, different marketing kinds of things, whatever. We've really gotten close with those folks. We feel like they are giving us honest opinions about some of the ways we're trying to talk about things. And, you know, it's a great sort of sounding board to be like, oh, we're thinking of doing this. How would you respond? Because they really came to us through this process, mostly because of the event, but then we really connected with them on a bunch of different levels. And so we just have this kind of unlimited focus group that helps give us feedback. And, you know, one of the swimmers who was our top fundraisers last year did a little fundraising tip series for us this year, you know, so she was really successful at it. And she wanted to help others be successful at it. And she did it sort of under her own will. You know, she was the one who came up with the idea.
How much did she raise last year?
Between 2,000 and 3,000, I think.
Okay.
And this year we already have a couple people on that level
I
already.
I noticed that. One of your board members,
Phil Von Voigtlander.
He's the top ranker, isn't he, at this point?
Yeah. He's the major rock star.
I'm gunning for him.
Yeah. Yep, he's been top for a while, and I keep telling him people are coming closer, and he's probably going to have to raise a little
bit
more if he wants to stay there.
Yep. Well, so far we've been super lucky because it was raining when I got here, and then it kind of cleared, and we've made a kind of a dramatic, bold gamble that it wouldn't rain on us again. It's just kind of changing around. A little bit sun, blue skies, and big heavy clouds. You've got this swimming event, and the swimmers who register to swim the 2 miles, and let me just kind of get a little clarification. It's an event. You can swim it without having to race, but
correct.
There's definitely people who are going to try and race, right?
Yes, there are people who will race. You know, when we first start this, we want it to feel like anybody can come out. We made it challenging enough that you should get in the water a few times before you do it, but not so hard that it excludes people. And we have visions, you know, in 5 or 10 years of having, you know, the actual timed events where you can get qualify for other events,
yep.
You know, have a kid swim, have all these other kinds of things. But for right now, it's a way for people to get in the water. We give you 2 hours before we drag you out. Last year, everybody had it done within an hour,
uh-huh.
A little bit more than that. So, and so I think it's really that kind of opportunity for people to get out and do whatever level they're comfortable at doing. And there were people who took it super seriously, and then there were people who just wanted to be in the water.
Since you've got all these different kinds of swimmers, does everybody enter as a big crowd and then the faster people just find their way to the front, or what?
Yeah, depends on how many folks we have register.
Uh-huh.
So if we get to a point where there's too many people where we feel we can really safely let everybody go at one point, we would do heats, if you will,
okay.
And we would ask people.
Yeah, what do you want to be?
Like, how serious are you? Like, let's get you in the crazy serious, you know, elbowing group. You guys can go first and then let everybody else go afterwards. So, but really, you know, those people, they weed themselves out naturally. So the people who are super competitive about it will get their way to the front, you know, no matter how you do the start of the race. So that's kind of what we found last year, was the people who wanted to do it got out front, and the people who, you know, just wanted to swim just sort of let whatever happen. So
okay, now the other part of this is that everybody who registers to swim has to raise money, a minimum of it's $40 to register. Mm-hmm. And even if there's, you know, if you're joining another team, whatever, let's say like the Daughter of God team that I've set up, mm-hmm. I'm the only person on that team so far. But the idea is that every person or team who registers pays a $40 registration fee, and then every person who swims has to raise another $150, whether you're on a team or whether you're swimming by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that $150 goes directly to you guys.
Yes. So the way that it's set up, the cost to register, both for the swimmers and if they want to have a support paddler, that money goes into providing the stuff for the day of the event.
Sure, got it.
Any money that we get from sponsorships goes into providing the stuff for the day.
So that's the...
So any of the money that we got in, you know, there's all kinds of weird stuff you have to pay for, right?
Yeah, sure.
So we sort of have a budget set out so that we want to get enough sponsorship and enough people registering that covers the cost of the event. What the money that comes back to us at the end of the day is the money everybody fundraises.
Got it. So just to make that clear to myself, so the $40 covers the $40 that I'm paying covers all of the logistics that you guys need to do that day to make the race actually possible. And the $150 that I raise, that goes directly into the coffers for the Watershed Center for their operations and staff and whatever.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
And so if we raise more than $150, ideally that's what each swimmer would like to do. They have to raise $150 minimally, but if they can raise more than that, that would be wonderful.
Yes. And I think the reason that it's set up that way is so that folks know that fundraising piece, however much they want to put into that and however much they can get out of that as individuals in the groups that they are talking with,
yep,
that's the money that comes back to us.
Yep.
And so we're sort of putting it in everybody else's hands and saying, you know, you guys are the ones who are out there and doing this and swimming. You know, bring your network of folks and know that every cent that they donate is coming directly to us.
Okay.
Let the registration fees and the sponsorships and all of that pay for the event. Let the work that everybody else is doing to talk about why they're doing it come directly to us. There's no questions about, you know, what does my money go towards if I'm donating to you? It's it comes straight to the work that we do, you know, advocating for clean water.
Yeah, it's really cute because on the fundraising page for me, it's like, give to the daughter of God. And like, well, no, that's actually not right. So I have to actually explain, and people kind of get a little confused by that, which is perfectly fine because it gives you an opportunity to explain what's actually happening.
Yeah.
And so CrowdRise is the platform that you guys chose to do this fundraising component. Why did you pick them and not like GoFundMe or Kickstarter or whatever?
It seemed to be the best way to set up what we wanted to do, where you have an organization and then you can set up individual events. So we have sort of our Watershed Center CrowdRise page, and then every year we can set up a new swim event.
Okay.
Or we could do other fundraising events, and it all sort of umbrellas under that. So it really was that functionality of being able to have events.
Mm-hmm.
It also makes it a little confusing because you have different events. You know, you're setting up a fundraiser.
Yeah.
We've had people who've set it up under something else or whatever. But the great thing is even if you set it up under last year's swim or something else Watershed Center related, it all gets to the same place.
Got it.
And so some of that confusion that can happen because it's set up that way also isn't a really big deal because the money still gets back to the same place.
So does CrowdRise take a chunk of the money they gather for you?
CrowdRise takes a percentage, and it's sort of up, it's out there when somebody goes on and donates, you know, what they want to donate, what the fee is going to be, and it kind of gives people a chance to pay that fee themselves or have that fee come back to us.
So the lowest donation you can make is $10. Let's say that I want to donate $10. It has a little screen that says you can pay for the nonprofit's overhead right now if you want to by paying a little bit more, or we're going to take out from that $10 what we need to fund CrowdRise.
Correct.
All right. And so that's how it's handled. You can actually get on there and give all of the money to you guys by paying that extra little fee, and then CrowdRise gets their money and you actually get really $10.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep. Any system that's set up that way, there's, you know, credit card fees and all that kind of stuff.
Sure,
there's always stuff that comes off. What we like is that it gives people the ability to figure out how they want to handle that. You know, we've also had people who don't want to deal with that and will send us a check and we can deal with that too.
Cool.
So, you know, any way that folks want to donate.
Oh, so if I didn't want to do the CrowdRise thing, I'd be like, here's 40 and here's another 150.
If you sent us a check, we would handle it sort of internally. We would get that actually posted on CrowdRise towards your goal because we can do that internally. But it just means you sent us a check with no fees as opposed to doing it online. So folks can really do it any way that they want.
The idea of the whole fundraising component, I mean, a lot of people will be like, what? What? Fundraising? I don't know. What? How do I do that? And then, of course, CrowdRise has a few tips. And then you said that your previous big fundraiser last year put a tip video out or whatever, put some tips out. So there are ways for people to learn. But it's for a lot of people, I would say most people, raising money from their friends is a very new experience.
Yeah, it is. And I think there's a couple of ways that we encourage people. Social media is pretty much everybody's on some type of social media.
Yep.
And that is a great way. And I had some stories last year of people who sort of blasted it out there and got, you know, high school friends to donate. It's how you talk about it with your own network and whatever platform you're comfortable doing that at. We have tips for making phone calls, for doing emails, for doing social media. The SWIM Facebook page is also profiling each one of the fundraisers too. And so
I didn't know that.
The Watershed Center has a page and the SWIM has a page. And so when the SWIM says, you know, hey, did you know Daughter of God is on this? And, you know, here's their story. Both the Watershed Center and the SWIM sort of repost each other's stuff and sends that out to everybody that, you know, likes those pages as well.
Cool.
Trying to, you know, get people to put faces to those folks that are out there swimming and fundraising and stuff for us.
I didn't know that. I'll have to check that out.
That's cool. Yeah. We're trying to do, you know, every time a new person pops up, we try to get that in the queue so that everybody gets equal airtime on our sources as well. But also gives that ability to reach people that they wouldn't reach themselves.
Clearly the SWIM is a contest, right? And one could think of the fundraising as kind of a fun contest as well. Have you made any moves to kind of, you know, encourage that kind of rivalry between people?
So we do have prizes for the top fundraisers.
What?
So top swimmers, wetsuit, non-wetsuit age groups, and, you know, there's five or six different categories. But we also have a top fundraising, I think it's top three fundraisers, get prizes the day of.
What kind of prizes?
It all depends on the kind of stuff we can get, right? Last year we had growlers from Shorts. We had gift certificates. We had clothing from M22. Just kind of little swag bags, right? So for other folks that would donate to those things to help us show our appreciation, but also those folks as well, those organizations and stuff that donated. Kayak rentals, that kind of stuff.
Sweet.
So it all depends on what we can get together, but we do have prizes for those.
So that's another way that businesses can get involved, is they can say, hey, we want to give you some prizes.
Yeah. Yep. So we have sponsorship levels of people who want to, you know, be on our posters and help us advertise and help us market them. But then we also have these sort of in-kind opportunities for people who just want to, you know, further their business and what they do by providing a small little gift certificate or something, a hat, whatever it is. And then again, that helps us market the stuff that they're doing, but also shows that they support the work that we're doing.
Right on. Now, I like Traverse City and everything. Okay. I come here, you know, a lot of cool stuff here. You got Oriana and you got the State Theater and all these cool things. So, but I live in Benzie County. What's in it for us? How does the Watershed Center do for Benzie County?
Not a whole lot, because Benzie County is really outside of the Grand Traverse Bay watershed.
Exactly. So all that water that drains into Grand Traverse Bay, Benzie County is in a different watershed.
It is.
It's the Crystal Lake watershed, the Platte Lake watershed.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. Absolutely.
Well, I thought I saw on your website, maybe this is just a big fib, that you guys do some E. coli testing on Frankfort Beach.
We do.
You do that?
We do.
So you're lying. You actually do stuff in Benzie County.
I am lying. We do stuff. We do things for you.
I know this better than you do.
We've helped with watershed plans and that sort of thing too. So we don't actually literally draw a line in the sand and say we will not cross outside of our watershed, especially when there's areas that aren't covered by other environmental groups.
Now, it seems to me like you've obviously sussed out how to set up this. Watershed Center has been around for a while. You guys have you know, this is your second year of this swim, but you've been doing all kinds of other stuff. I mean, obviously, when this happened, how long ago?
4 years ago.
This, all of this. Anyway, we're here at this restoration of this sunlighted creek. Is that right?
Uh-huh.
Stream. And you know, this is 4 years old. So you guys have been doing stuff for a while. You guys have got all this stuff going on. All this work you've done, how to help to manage or begin to figure out how to manage a watershed like the Grand Traverse Bay. So how interested are you in cloning little organizations like yourself for the other watersheds?
I think it's always a possibility. I will say, from my perspective, for our organization, we need to continue to focus on Grand Traverse Bay, because I feel like there's still pieces we haven't figured out yet. And there's still stuff that we need to do. And we have very limited resources. We have a staff of four.
Mm-hmm.
We just added a full-time baykeeper. We always had a baykeeper. It was a volunteer. Now we actually have a position, and we're figuring out what that means. World is changing. Money, grant-wise, it's coming and going. We have no idea where stuff's going to stand, you know, in the federal budget here in a few months.
Are you guys affected by the federal budget?
We are. Every amount of money that we have right now in a grant would potentially go away under the current proposed budget cuts. Now, they just came out and said GLRI came out of a committee and saying GLRI funds, the Great Lake Restoration Initiative funds, they want to restore those. But then there's other pieces too. So all of the money that we get through the state is actually passed through from federal funds. Clean Water Act stuff, Beach Act, so monitoring the beaches like we're doing right now.
In Benzie County, for instance.
In Benzie County, we've got a bunch of inland lakes. We have a bunch of lakes throughout our watershed and outside of our watershed. That we test for E. coli on a weekly basis to make sure folks are safe when they're swimming on the beaches, all that funding would go away.
Wow.
So we are really affected by that. So we're sort of in this phase, I think, where we can kind of go a couple of different roads, and we're figuring out what it means and what people's responsibilities are. We're trying to understand, we're taking a look again at what we do and why we do it, evaluating our programs. Just because we've done it for 10 years doesn't mean we need to continue it.
So just out of curiosity, what is your operating budget? How much money do you guys actually spend a year?
It's funny because it has a huge range depending on what we get for grants.
Okay.
So our general operating budget, it's about $300,000.
Okay, so it's not huge.
It's not huge, but if we do get grants and we do on-the-ground work, we could have a budget of $3 million in 1 year.
Got it.
So it really does vary a lot, but if we're looking at what does it take for us to keep our doors open, it's $300,000. That's, you know, that's our staff and all of the general stuff that we do. Our on-the-ground work is sort of what makes the rest of our budget kind of go up and down, which is also something that I think is difficult for folks to realize, that when we do get a $1 million grant, 95% of that goes back out the door.
Of course, yeah.
So we're paying folks. We 100% of our grant funds stay within our watershed. We hire local. We make sure that everything that we are doing when we're hiring folks is within our community. So 100% of our grant funds go right back out into the community. But about 95% of that goes back out our doors and pays other folks to do some of that work too. So it's a little bit tough to fundraise when you're saying, oh, we got $1 million, and people are like, well, what do you need my $30 for? In all reality, you know, that's paying for that project.
Yeah,
it's only a little bit is staying with us.
That $1 million is paying for some specific thing that you guys are accomplishing.
Right.
But you need to have the organization in place to manage the project.
Correct. And then do all the other stuff that grants don't pay for. So grants don't like to pay for you to go stand up at public comment and tell, you know, the city they're doing something they shouldn't for water quality.
Yeah. And also, I mean, there's a component of people taking responsibility for their local region by saying, okay, well, you know, we are going to fund this. We are going to basically put the money to make this happen, as opposed to expecting it to come from somewhere else, somewhere outside of the area.
Right, and that, you know, that's part, the SWIM helps us do this too, but that's part of what we're trying to do a little bit better job of. All our work is local. How do we talk about what we do with folks so that they recognize that, value it, appreciate it, and want to help out in some way? You know, it can take a lot of forms, but getting people, you know, working more closely with the folks, you know, people in Kids Creek neighborhood who appreciate Kids Creek, and helping to talk with them more about these sorts of things that we're doing and why it's important and what they need to be doing, and, you know, making those connections in a little bit of a different way. So I feel like staying local and staying within our watershed is really important right now as we continue to try to message ourselves and have folks understand who we are and what we do, and understand ourselves, you know, and sort of relook at what we're doing, why we're doing it. What do we value? What do we think is important? And what could we maybe let another group do?
This has been episode 048 of the Daughter of Godcast, Team Dog. By helping people to have deep rapport with wild water and involving them directly in stewardship, the Watershed Center meets my standards for nonprofit integrity. The Grand Traverse Bay in northern Michigan may be far from you, but all waters are one. So don't forget to go to www.dog.movie, that's DOG.movie, and click on the blue and white Swim for Grand Traverse Bay logo. Give $11 to help Daughter of God protect wild waters. You'll also be encouraging Team Dog to swim our hearts out. And you'll be helping fascinating strangers to enter the fold of the Chosen. Become the audience for My Little Movie, my 12-year odyssey. We can do a lot of good together for just $11.